This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
First, the anecdotal evidence about the holiday shopping season. Now, some actual numbers. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. We have some early readouts on how retailers fared this holiday season. A report from MasterCard's Spending Plus says sales from just after Thanksgiving to Christmas Eve were up 7.9% from last year. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams joins me now live with more. Morning, Kimberly.
Morning, David.
What drove the increase in sales this year?
Apparently, the Fashionista's women's clothing sales really helped drive this spike, according to MasterCard, as well as furniture sales. Things like couches and, you know, chairs. MasterCard says people seemed willing and able to spend on big ticket items, maybe finally transferring some of those savings on gas prices, which we hadn't seen up until now.
Look, honey, a new recliner. Now, a lot of retailers and analysts were worried about a more sluggish holiday shopping season. Has this banished those concerns?
Not necessarily. These numbers just cover between Black Friday and Christmas Eve, not the entire season. Previous estimates from the National Retail Federation said that overall sales in November and December would probably only go up about 3.7%. And the weekend before Christmas saw really sluggish retail sales, which is what worried people in the first place.
Now, we reported yesterday here about all the logistics of the holiday returns, and there's news that retailers are going to be on the lookout for fraud this year.
Right. Fraudulent returns are expected to cost retailers more than $2 billion overall this year. And obviously, some of that's going to come from these holiday returns. So some retailers like Sears and Costco are being stricter about returns, trying to hang on to some of those holiday gains.
Mm-hmm. That's Marketplace's Kimberly Adams in Washington. Thank you. Let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London, coming off an extended Christmas break, up 0.3% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up on the 0.4% range. The 10-year Treasury yield is up at 2.24%. How much are we buying from over there versus how much we're selling to them? This morning, we'll get a preliminary look at America's trade balance that helps us understand where the jobs and the wealth is flowing, to what extent we're doing the work in the economy, or are we doing the consuming? As Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports, a strong dollar is making American products more expensive abroad.
To some Americans, a strong dollar may sound like a good thing.
Imported goods are cheaper, and you can afford to take a vacation in Europe, for example.
Barry Bosworth is an economist at the Brookings Institution. He says we Americans have been importing more than we export for decades. But the strong dollar is deepening that dynamic. And that's not great for American firms that sell their wares abroad.
Because the goods you produce are more difficult to sell overseas.
Bosworth says that trickles down to American workers who could lose their jobs if demand slackens for the products they make. Patrick Newport is an economist at IHS Global Insight. He expects the dollar's value will start to drop next year, but he says that will take a long time to flush through the economy and show up in the trade balance.
So what we're expecting over the next 2 or 3 years is for exports to grow very slowly and for imports to grow faster than they have in recent times.
And that, he says, will be a drag on the economy. I'm Annie Baxter from Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is listener-supported. To help keep our coverage relevant and hopefully compelling, please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount really, counts twice thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st. Congress has made some of the biggest alterations yet to what the health care reform law was intended to do. One was a delay in a tax that tended to be more popular among health care economists than perhaps the taxpaying public. The so-called Cadillac tax penalizes employers that offer comparatively expensive insurance coverage. This Cadillac tax was supposed to take effect in 2018, but now that's delayed until at least 2020. One of the architects of the health law says that might not be as big of a loss as some people are saying. As the year wraps up, we're hearing from our reporters on the beat. Today, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein from our health desk at WHYY. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, David.
So the world goes on even without this Cadillac tax?
There are certainly a lot of economists out there who are very clear that Cadillac tax is heads and shoulders the best incentive to control healthcare spending. That's because it taxes the kind of generous insurance plans that leave consumers with few copays or deductibles and can encourage lots of potentially wasteful spending. But Harvard economist David Cutler, the architect you just mentioned, says there's a drawback, and the drawback is that it's a crude tool.
The biggest difficulty is that people don't always cut back on exactly the right things.
Cutler says, look, when costs go up, most consumers are going to cut back by 10 to 15%. But that could also include preventative care, things that could be good to get now that could stave off really big ticket expensive items down the road, David.
Well, that's the problem there. But if the tax goes away permanently, the suggestion now is just delayed a couple years. But if it goes away altogether, where does that leave us? Are there other ways to control spending?
Cutler would argue that the Cadillac tax and other changes have already had some kind of impact. The Kaiser Family Foundation points out that high deductible policies have gone from 4% in 2006 to 25% today. And Cutler says he doesn't see that genie going back in the bottle anytime soon. So this higher out-of-pocket exposure is already having some of this downward pressure on spending.
Now, as you look ahead, what happens if this idea of a tax on the fancy plans is really taken off the table?
The Cadillac tax wasn't the only method they had in the law. They also had an idea where you'd create incentives for doctors and hospitals to try to figure out different ways to pay them. Sometimes people will talk about accountable care organizations or bundled payments. These are sort of different ways to pay people to get them to do less wasteful, more precise care. The problem is we don't really know exactly what the right mix of incentives is. So this is the kind of thing that's going to take time, and it's probably going to take a lot of money to figure it out right.
All right. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein from the Health Desk. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you may think the following is just a minor hassle until you go through it yourself. You go to the health insurance company online to see which doctors are part of the plan, and then telephone call after telephone call, you find out the doctor is not on the plan anymore. This can suck up days. Well, starting in the new year, meaning starting at the end of this week, the federal government can start fining insurance companies up to $25,000 per customer if they don't keep the directories up to date. This applies to Medicare doctors, but state regulators might also be interested in widening the scope of penalties for health provider directories that don't match up to reality. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Beatty Jong. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.